You know, back in December, right at the end of the year, I was actually on the air with our pal Roger Lajoie, and the news that IKF had signed with the Blue Jays broke, like, mid-show. And since then, that was, two or three days from the end of 2023, I think. I readily admit I did not have IKF with a 5 RBI day and batting well over 300 over his last 18, 19 games now. I did not have that on the bingo card, I gotta say. I also did not have Yusei Kikuchi bodying an opposing player off the bench on the bingo card as well. I didn't have either of those things there. Kikuchi with the old Dion Phaneuf on Soderstrom in foul territory. You know, as long as he's okay, then you know what, Yusei? You do you, man. Body those guys all you want. You lay them out. I'm all for it. But hey, Jays grab a 6-4 win over the A's to wrap up the series in Oakland. Like Ben and Chris were saying, the last ever game for the Jays out west at the Coliseum. Of course, the A's will play in Sacramento next year, and then in Vegas likely the year after if things go well for that. But the final game for the Blue Jays in Oakland at the Coliseum is a 6-4 win in the rubber match for them to win the series. Show Ali with you. You're listening to Jays Talk. We're live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Text me as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's text line is always open. You know, in all seriousness, on the Yusei Kikuchi thing at the end, I don't think Kikuchi on the replay, I don't think he saw Tyler Soderstrom on the play. On the replay, kind of looks like the pitch, like the foul ball in what is just an enormous amount of foul territory, right? Like, so many balls that are foul there would be well into the seats at, like, the Rogers Center, for example, or really most stadiums. But on the replay, kind of looks like Yusei looks up at the pitch as it's falling before Soderstrom even, like, crosses the dirt into the foul side of first base. He gets out of there without looking up directly in front of him, and then he kind of collides with Soderstrom. But hey, I mean, they were both fine. If Yusei wants to drop those guys like a bad habit, then you know what? I am all for it. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590 is the text line, the People's text line, always open. Let's take a look at the People's text line before we talk about IKF and the offense, the pitching. Jeremy in the Beaches. Actually, you know what? I see a lot of texts about IKF, really. Jeremy in the Beaches, wow. IKF all. I didn't see that coming. Underrated. Robert and Ajax couldn't be happier with what IKF has done so far, and I was not a fan of the signing at first. Above 700 OPS and a 104 WRC plus and fantastic defense, my credit to him. And there's another text here. There's no name on this one, actually. So if you do, you know, just get a shout out here on the text line, but no name on this one. But it says, when will the Jays realize that IKF should be in the leadoff spot? You know, I don't think so. You know what? I kind of like where he is right now. Maybe there is some merit to moving him up a teensy bit in the order, but I kind of like him giving some pop to the bottom of the order. You know what I mean? Like, I think the it's magnified a little bit because David Schneider has been batting, and David Schneider came through with a pinch hit RBI sac fly today, but I think it's magnified because Schneider, he was pretty hot, and now he is, you know, I think I said this in the pregame show, but since mid-May, he's been batting below 200, so, you know, well-deserved rest day for Schneider, and then he ended up playing today anyways, but I think I'm generally speaking okay with it, with Schneider staying in the leadoff spot, but I don't know, maybe if you want to keep moving it around, it's fine, but I have received quite a bit of text over the last, what? I guess actually over the whole season, not even just last month or so, as I was going to say, but we've gotten a lot of texts that kind of talk of the idea about maybe there is something to, you know, letting it stay the way it is for a little while and seeing how it continues to play out. I mean, certainly if IKF continues to bat super, like he continues to stay super hot at the plate, then maybe you have no choice. Kind of like David Schneider made them have no choice but to put him in the leadoff spot, coinciding with George Springer not batting very well for most of the season. But, you know, I think I kind of prefer him batting where he is because he has been playing very well. But you know what? Let's talk about IKF, right? He has 2-run single in the second inning. You know, immediately after the 2-run single in the second, he was batting 339 over his last 18 games. That is incredible. That's from the Blue Jays. But after that, the wild thing about this offense is that you get so many good results from them in very small pockets, and they don't seem to manage to consistently string those good moments out over a course of a whole ball game, right? Like yesterday, I kind of thought that, you know, against pitchers who you should beat, they were capable of doing it. Because I know a lot of you guys were like, oh, well, they took two or three from the A's, big deal. And it came down to the wire on in two of those three games, one they lost and one they won. So I totally get that. But, you know, they should at least be able to do a little bit more offensively against pitchers who you've never heard of, right? Like Mitch Spence, there was a point where after IKF's two-run single in the second, the Jays went 16 up and 16 down. Now, again, Mitch Spence, I think, played very well today, but the A's are 19th in team ERA and 23rd in opponent's batting average. Like, to have the offense go 16 up and 16 down, frankly, just not good enough. You can't be doing that. I mean, you can't be doing that against, like, the best teams in the world either, but against that A's, like, good heavens. I know they're not, like, no team is absolutely wretched because, you know, they're all ball players for a reason, but I mean, in theory, if you want to be competitive and you're trying to claw your way back above 500, you should be better. Ultimately, they came through again, thanks to IKF. But man, I got to say one moment, which we could have easily made this play of the game as well. I guess it could have been like a compilation to make it the play of the game. But that moment where in the eighth inning, you're down now 3-2 after Trevor Richards with somewhat of an uncharacteristic outing for him, couldn't seem to locate the zone particularly well. And even the Abraham Toro jam shot, the little blooper, if you look at where that pitch was, way outside of the zone, like 6 to 7 inches to the right of the zone. And Abraham Toro kind of just sticks his bat out there and it just bloops in there, kind of just past Bo, just before Kiermaier. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of unluckiness factor in there. But again, I mean, the offense for much of this game basically made the pitchers again have to walk the tightrope. But hey, I often see you guys on the text line. We get the calls as well. The proponents of small ball. You guys got a masterclass in small ball today. That's what I'm talking about. Like the combined eighth inning from the Blue Jays could have just been the play of the game. Varsho gets on base with a single against someone who had been really tough. The guy hadn't allowed a run in ages, Alexander. But IKF comes in with another massive play, which is why he is certainly the player of the game. But IKF bunts him to second. Varsho aggressively stealing third. And then Davis Schneider, like I said, with a pinch hit RBI sack fly to tie the game. Hey, put that whole inning in the small ball Hall of Fame, right? Also probably best that they were managed to get it against Scott Alexander and weren't asked to do it against Mason Miller, who probably in the moment right now is the most dominant reliever in baseball. But great stuff. And then, of course, in the 10th inning, IKF bases clearing, a three-run double, top 10. And then to put the cherry on top, he makes all three outs in the bottom of the 10th. So, hey, great stuff for IKF. He's been absolutely phenomenal. Let's go to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Let's go to Russ in New Jersey. What's up, Russ?
Good afternoon. I think Dalton Varsho, you got to talk about his at-bat. He's a left-handed pitcher. He's a good pitcher. He's 0-2 in the count. He works the count to 2-2. Now, I'm sitting there saying he's going to strike out, but the guy 0-2 against a tough lefty gets it to 2-2, doesn't try to do too much, just gets the base hit, and the rest you already documented. So that's, you know, it's big, but I thought that was a great at-bat by Varsho, and obviously the stolen base. You know, I think they're not in last place now. I'm driving, but I think they're out of last place now. So, you know, they're one game under 500, and now, you know, I think this team, a lot will tell. They're playing a lot tougher opponents. You know, obviously they get seven hits today, so I'm not going to jump up and down against, like you said, some guys that, you know, aren't Cy Young or Sandy Koufax out there. So, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, Milwaukee's a decent team, and they're probably going to be pretty upset after getting their head handed to them by Detroit today. But, you know, their offense is going to have to do a lot more in order to beat the better teams. And we'll see. I think this month is really a telling point. But if you look at it, what are we, two games out of the wild? We're one game under 500, and we're only two games behind Minnesota. So for all the optimists, you know, you can look at it and say, listen, as much as we've struggled, if they could put something together, you know, we could be looking, you know, hopefully at that third wild card spot.
Hey, Russ, appreciate the call, man. As always, thanks for joining me on Jays Talk. Yeah, just to check the out-of-town scoreboard, actually, real quick. To Russ's point, if you're talking about the wild card, So the Twins are the team the Blue Jays are looking to catch because they occupy that third wild card spot. The Twins beat the Pirates in extras today, 11-5. So, gosh, they must have had quite the top of the 10th inning because the game was in Pittsburgh. So 11-5, Minnesota wins. The Orioles swept the Rays, to Russ's point. And the Red Sox, just because the Red Sox are coming up pretty soon, Red Sox also took extra innings, but they beat the White Sox in Chicago 6-4. So with all of those results, you basically have in the division, at least, you have the Red Sox at 33-33. You have the Blue Jays a half game back of the Red Sox. The Blue Jays are now 32-33, and the Rays got swept by the Orioles, so they are 31-34. So the Rays now occupy the basement of the AL East. They are a game back of the Blue Jays, who themselves, like I said, are half game back of the Red Sox. And you have six games against the Red Sox coming up this month. So that's going to be, I mean, you haven't played the Red Sox at all this year. So certainly, as Russ says, for the optimists, you have some room to make up that ground, I suppose I should say. And the Twins, like you said, I mean, really the two teams directly behind the Twins are the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. I guess the Tigers also winning, as you mentioned, would put them in that group as well. So the three teams behind the Twins are Red Sox, Tigers, Blue Jays, but that's a good place to be, or a better place to be. Having said that, Milwaukee, not an easy team to beat up, certainly. I mean, they're good, but maybe not great. They're the third division leader in the NL right now. It's Phillies, Dodgers, Brewers in terms of record. The Brewers are 38-27. So, you know, they're a team you can beat, certainly, but you got to take advantage of these pitching matchups. I was actually looking at this earlier during the game because BNS, Ben Nicholson Smith of Sportsnet, tweeted out the probables for the series starting tomorrow. It's going to be Berríos versus Colin Ray, Yusei Kikuchi versus TBA. It's going to be Carlos Rodriguez. He's not on the Brewers 40-man right now, but I think they had said earlier in the week that it is going to be Carlos Rodriguez. So Kikuchi versus the 22-year-old call-up Rodriguez, and then Wednesday, Chris Bassitt versus Tobias Myers. Now, I watch a lot of baseball. I don't think I've watched a lot of Tobias Myers or Carlos Rodriguez. I actually have seen Carlos Ray. You got to win those matchups. And if you have Berríos, Kikuchi, and Bassitt, you probably have the advantage in all three of those matchups, right? I mean, the Jays managed to avoid Freddy Peralta, who got banged around a little bit yesterday. But at the same time, I mean, to Russ's point, and we talked about this a little bit during the series. I think I talked about this when I did the solo show when Hogan Harris was on the mound for the A's on Friday. But I mean, the Jays regularly, I mean, they did it today too. They regularly make guys you haven't heard of look like, you know, like Nolan Ryan out there, right? I mean, like Mitch Spence was phenomenal today for the most part. Hogan Harris was great on Friday. Like, we're not talking about like Tyler Glasnow and Corbin Burnes, right? We're talking about guys that you in theory should be able to beat. So in theory, you have the advantage with Berríos, Kikuchi, and Bassitt Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But I mean, still, they got to be careful too, because you're going to be playing against the guys like Willy Adames and Christian Yelich, and Bryce Turang has been phenomenal this year, a young guy who has been so good. So you got to be careful, to be sure. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870. Actually, no, the call dropped. Never mind. Okay, well, those are the numbers to call. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the text line, 590-590, name and location. A text that does not support IKF being at the top of the order. There's no name on this one. So again, give me your name so I can give you a shout out. But this person says, if you stack all the quote unquote hitters at the top of the order, they will pitch around them below at the bottom of the order. You do need IKF or players like him to keep the runs looming over other pitchers. That's kind of why I like having IKF towards the bottom. He doesn't need to be batting at the very bottom. But Kiermaier and IKF, because they were batting 8-9 today, you know what? They haven't played poorly, I would say. They haven't played like badly. Certainly defensively, we know what they bring, and it's excellent defensively. But even Kiermaier, because we know what IKF's done, Kiermaier, I think, entering play today at a WRC plus of around 100, which is kind of what you want from most players, right? I mean, Bo, for example, had a WRC plus of like 82 or like 81 or whatever it is. So Bo has not been playing particularly well, but hey, we have seen Kiermaier, again, albeit in a relatively small sample size, play okay enough to, you know, put some question marks in the pitcher's head. So I can kind of like having IKF towards the bottom, maybe batting 7-8 or 8-9 or whatever it is in terms of matching him with other guys. I think it's probably fine. Rob from Whitby just says, Isaiah kinda frickin' rocks. I like that one, Rob. I do kind of like that one. And someone else says, Kikuchi can body those lads all day long. He pitches well. He can afford to take out some competition. And you know what? As long as he's okay. He kind of like went down and like had a slight grimace on his face for like the briefest of seconds. And I thought to myself, good heavens. It would be so typical of any sport to have Kikuchi go out there on a relatively innocuous play and get injured. Oh, man. But he looks okay. So, you know, he looks fine. Austin from Bruce County. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is the best signing of the offseason in the entire MLB. Now, look, I have not looked at the production of, like, every other person, to be sure. But I got to say, I mean, no. Like, I remember I mentioned that I was on the show with Raj, and he and I were talking about, hey, we wanted to have other guys sign with the Blue Jays. And he was a big proponent, if I remember, of J.D. Martinez. And I was a big proponent of Jorge Soler. And surprise, surprise, neither of those guys have played particularly well. So I don't know. I'm not sure if he's the best signing, but I mean that he is even close to being one of the best. Cause look, obviously Shohei and Yamamoto, I almost personally don't count them. I just kind of put them in their own class, right? Maybe Teoscar Hernandez is the next guy, but of like the quote unquote average players, I'm probably going to say IKF is up there. You know what I mean? Like when we're putting him in the same class of signing as Kiermaier and like Candelario and Matt Chapman and like those guys. Cause remember, if you guys remember the off season list of people you could sign as free agents was like constantly being said to have been not a super hot or sexy one compared to, let's say, next year. And that like Matt Chapman probably was like the third best player outside of Otani and Yamamoto. So that IKF has been like one of the best ones. I got to say is a great development. It is. But I mean, obviously, if you're like objectively picking it, Shohei Ohtani. But I mean, you know, Shohei is like a unicorn for many reasons. So I kind of like don't count him. 590-590, name and location. I know everyone, again, no name on this one. Just leave your name and location. So I give you a shout out. I know everyone is calling for Atkins ahead, and I don't disagree since him and Shapiro were all about building a team to succeed for years, but they have traded away picks and prospects. More prospects, since you can't really trade picks, and haven't gotten much in the pantry. That being said, this team is better than their record, have really underperformed as a group. A great second half could salvage a first couple of months to forget. I think that's like a valid way to look at the season. That's definitely like a glass half full way, I think, way to look at the season. And I know I've been accused of being maybe like a glass half empty maybe, but you know what? If they pick it up against the Brewers, you get a couple of games of the six games you have coming up against the Guardians and the six games you have coming up against the Red Sox. You take some wins in both of those games. I mean, both of those series, both home and away in Cleveland and in Boston and certainly at the Rogers Center. I think you'll feel pretty good about the Jays. Now, of course, the Cleveland series is a tough ask because Tanner Bibee has been very good. The offense certainly has been great for Cleveland as well. Like Josh Naylor and Jose Ramirez have been two of the more feared players in all of baseball, I would say. But if you can make up some ground, I mean, again, we're just, you know, looking at a team that's what? Two games out of a wild card spot. The Twins have not played the most inspiring of baseball in a much worse division than the American League East. So I don't know. I think it's definitely doable. Give me a call. 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590. *590 on your cell. 590-590 is the text line. That's where you can reach me. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from John Schneider. We'll read more of your texts and hear from you on the phones as well. You're listening to Jays Talk. Jays win it 6-4 over the Athletics in the final game at the Coliseum for Toronto. Jays Talk will continue after this on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, I mean, it's credit to the guys, you know. I think that we understand this is a long season and there's still, whatever, 96 games left, you know. So, you know, proud of the way they're going about it, really, with, you know, some adjustments that have been made. Pitchers stepping up, and I think our bat's getting better. So, again, long way to go in this year, and I think, you know, the more we can just kind of keep churning out series, and love the way they fought back today, really. I mean, that's to get out of here with two, and, you know, after a tough one on the first night here, really, really couldn't be prouder of them, but they're in a good spot right now.
As John Schneider talking about leaving Oakland just one game under 500, the Blue Jays win 6-4 today. They get the series win. And they look ahead to another road series tomorrow, the first of three between the Blue Jays and Brewers in Milwaukee. You're listening to Jays Talk. Show Ali with you for another 10 minutes or so here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app as well. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590-590, name and location is the text line. And the people's text line, as you guys know, is always open. We haven't talked about the pitching today. And on a day where they only let up four runs, and certainly, I guess the last run, the fourth run was, you know, on a ground out from Yenesis Cabrera. I think it was JJ Bleday with the RBI ground out, but Bowden Francis gets the start today, and I think there were some questions as to, was it a good idea to start Bowden Francis? I think some people wanted to start Trevor Richards, and obviously, like, hindsight would tell you that Richards, you know, he had a little trouble today, as we discussed, but I was relatively impressed by Bowden Francis. Four innings, three hits, no runs, one walk, three strikeouts. He threw 49 pitches. He had 31 of those were strikes, and early on, especially in the top of the first, or I guess the bottom of the first, pardon me, it felt like somewhat he was struggling to find the strike zone in that first inning. Like, he threw a ton of balls, and even the strikes that were out of the zone that guys were swinging on. But as the game went on, he did seem more comfortable in throwing pitches in the zone to challenge batters instead of kind of nibbling around the edges. He seemed to get in the groove with the curveball and splitter particularly. And we know the splitter actually is something he added in the offseason this year. But the curveball tumbling in there at like 72 to 73 miles an hour is not something that's easy to deal with. Very, very Chris Bassett-esque of him. I'm betting he wasn't fully stretched out as he was after the spring when he was essentially anointed the team's fifth starter because he only threw 49 pitches. And in the first game of the season, which was tough, it was like that big loss against the Astros, I think, in Houston. But he had gone 79 pitches. The next start, he went 77 pitches. So those are starts one and two of the season, and 49 pitches today. I mean, he's just off the IL, so, you know, recently that probably doesn't mean they want to push it, and doubly so. At the point where he was taken out, I guess it would have been 8-9-1 in the order when he was taken out. So, you know, one hit would mean you face a little bit more dangerous batters after Abraham Toro. So, you know, probably the right move to not send him back out for the fifth. I generally liked what we saw from Bowden Francis. Probably one of his better starts, if not his best start of the season. He had had some decent outings in relief, but I feel like we hadn't seen too many of those to the point where might have been a little concerned. So great stuff from Bowden Francis today. Zach Pop came out for the fifth in his place, and he looked pretty nasty. Like, he got Aledmys Diaz, Max Schumann, and Abraham Toro to all go down swinging. The four-seamer looked pretty good. He used the sinker and the cutter pretty effectively against particularly Schumann and Toro as well. And, you know, here's the thing with Zach Pop, because you've gotten questions about him before. If he has, in fact, found something when it comes to maybe being a medium leverage guy, because of course he came in and the game was 2-0 at that point. So still, it was still like in a, it's not a save situation because it was the middle of the game, but you know what I mean? Like, the game was still relatively tight, but if you can find something of being a middle leverage, medium leverage guy, I think that'd be huge for this bullpen, especially after his struggles last year. Right. I mean, I for sure thought his ceiling was relatively capped, and it still might be. And he has given up runs against better offenses. Like, I mean, I think he gave up runs in two appearances, which I think were his only two appearances in the series against the Orioles at the Rogers Center. But all teams do need guys like this. So his place, while it might never be the highest of leverage, you know, fireman type guy, but especially while Eric Swanson's still down in the minors figuring things out, and while Jordan Romano's down there with the injury and so on, having someone like Pop is certainly valuable. And again, will he ever be the highest leverage reliever? Probably not, but a middle inning guy who can help you bridge the game from the starter to the actual high leverage guys like Chad Green and Jimmy Garcia, and when he comes back, Jordan Romano, is still someone who has a valuable place on ball clubs. So I am happy that he figured it out. Maybe I'm a little biased because he's Canadian, but I am glad he figured it out, or at least looks like he's starting to, right? Maybe we shouldn't like pencil him into the inner circle of trust just quite yet, but you know, maybe a guy that is on the fringes of the outer circle. I think that's a place for him. And you know, Nate Pearson, 436-foot bomb he gives up to Brent Rooker. He obviously did not mean to hang that slider. Still some things for Pearson to work on. He might be in the same place as Zach Pop, right? Because, you know, both these guys, I think we know what their ceilings are, and you hope for the best outcomes when they're out there. But at the same time, yeah, I'm not sure they're going to ever be the highest leverage dudes. But at the same time, the bats for much of this game did not really afford the pitchers the chance to make more than a handful of mistakes. Same thing happened with Trevor Richards, right? And I mean, Trevor Richards didn't really have it today. He had some trouble finding the zone. And again, the Toro hit was what a wild blooper from him, just sticking that bat out there. But still, I will say Chad Green, getting to see him for the second time in the series. And as Alan in a cab yesterday mentioned, you know, you don't want to fully blame Chad Green, but I thought his second appearance was much better, right? He really dialed up the velo. He basically only threw fastballs and sliders. He actually threw only two sliders. Every other pitch he threw was a four-seam fastball, and they were all basically 95 to 96 miles an hour, like 94 to 96 miles an hour, upper 95 point blank, miles an hour for the four-seamer, and he seemed to locate it pretty well. And he threw them to great effect. Guys really couldn't hold back on the higher velo pitches, and he was dotting the zone too. So good to see that from Chad Green, and he looked more dominant today than he had in maybe since coming off the IL with the velo particularly. So that's good to see. We'd gotten some texts on the text line about the trades, people wanting to see trades for other players or certainly for the Blue Jays. Actually, I don't know if you guys have seen this. So these were some reports from, it was probably earlier this morning, USA Today's Bob Nightingale, who's been on this radio station and the network pretty often. And he kind of has like the, you know, like around the league type news and notes at the end of most of his articles every weekend. And so this is from this morning. Rival executives believe that if the Toronto Blue Jays don't turn it around and are unable to sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette to extensions, they will be open to moving them. The Chicago Cubs have privately discussed the possibility of trying to acquire Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at the trade deadline. I mean, privately discussed, I don't know what that really means. Is that like, if I talk to my pal and I say, hey, like, you know, my fantasy team could really use so-and-so. Does that count as private discussions? I guess, right? So I don't really know what privately discussed really means, but clearly teams are circling. So I still think it's unlikely, personally. I think it's unlikely that Vladdy gets dealt this year. And I know many of you are like, well, if they're going to deal guys, Ross Atkins shouldn't be the guy to deal them. There was a text here, Kevin from Toronto, show who is currently on your must trade list this deadline, regardless of record. For me, it's Jimmy and Danny Jansen. I would say no to Danny Jansen. And maybe yes to Jimmy and Yusei Kikuchi, just because of their situations in terms of most teams can use starting pitching, most teams can use relief pitching. But if you trade Danny Jansen, I'm not sure. Like Brian Servin, I think, is the third catcher in the minors. I'm not sure you can get by that well with Kirk and Brian Servin if you're like two games out of a wild card spot, right? So I would say there is no situation in which, regardless of record, anyone gets traded. But you know. I think you got to be a little bit more out of it than two games with the wild card for them to be serious sellers at the deadline. I've been a fan of the Jays going out to acquire Luis Robert Jr. This is also from Bob Nightingale. They're White Sox listening to offers on anybody and everybody, including Luis Robert, who's under contract through 2027, owed about $61 million if his two club options are picked up. The White Sox would command a package greater than what the Padres gave up for Juan Soto at the 2022 deadline. I can't imagine that would be a thing that happens. There's no way. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. If Juan Soto can be traded, literally any player in baseball can be traded. But I can't imagine the White Sox get more than what the Nationals got for Juan Soto. They got, I forget everyone they got, but they certainly got Mackenzie Gore, who's been pretty good. CJ Abrams, who's been really good. And James Wood, who might be the best prospect in baseball. I'm not sure they're getting that. And then there's some other notes in here about Ryan McMahon and Pete Alonso. Rockies have no plans to trade Ryan McMahon. He is beloved in the organization. Also, Mets first baseman Pete Alonso expected to seek at least $200 million in the free agent market this winter. Teams seeking first baseman can instead turn to Paul Goldschmidt, Rhys Hoskins, and Christian Walker, all of whom are eligible for free agency. So I don't know. It just seems like the market for players is not going to be quite as robust as maybe we thought it would be. And I'm including the Blue Jays in this, honestly. I really am. I think it would take a lot more for the Blue Jays to, even if I know people think the ceiling of this team is capped and you know what this team is. And I would generally argue I would also know what the team is at this point in time, even following a series win in Oakland. But I think it's like in reality, I said this a couple of days ago, you're probably stuck in terms of moves being made unless they go well above 500 and they become buyers, or they sink way below 500 and out of necessity become sellers. That's kind of the bizarre reality of having the third wild card, because basically everyone's in it, right? That's where we are. But hey, appreciate the texts, appreciate the calls, appreciate you guys being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Dollard des Ormeaux et Vaudreuil-Dorion, Quebec. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Michael Jose Collins, I'm Sho Ali. I'm out of here. Blair and Barker, they've got you covered for the whole Brewers series and game one of the Guardian series, which will be at the Rogers Center. I'm back next weekend. Daniele Franceschi, Jesse Rubinoff will be alongside me at the Dome. Hey, have a great week, everyone. I'll talk to you later.